Infendo Radio is on now.
Welcome to Infendo Radio, the best Nintendo podcast on the English-speaking internet. This is episode 307. I'm your host, Lewis Pugh, and joining me tonight, we have Holly Falmouth.
Hello, everyone.
And Richie Palis.
How's it going?
Richie is our special guest this week. He is currently running a very exciting Kickstarter. However, we will go into a lot more detail about that into a later segment of the show.
Yeah. So
for this week, we have three main segments. We're going to start off talking about the very recent Nintendo Direct all around Smash Bros., which basically finished minutes before we started recording this show. Next, we're going to move on to the special feature regarding Richie's Kickstarter. And finally, we have some listener comments all about Smash Bros. As well. So it's a very big Smash Bros. Themed show. So, to kickstart the show, I have received an email from Nintendo's PR going down the different announcements which happened during this Nintendo Direct. So I thought the most structured and the way to make the most sense out of this whole thing, if I run down this one by one, and we can just use each as kind of a starting point to get our reactions of what just happened. So the first thing they really talked about was different launch windows. So the 3DS version is coming out in the summer, and the Wii U version is coming out in winter. So did anyone see this one coming?
No,
I had absolutely no idea. Yeah, I'm pretty excited that they did it that way, because they're kind of prolonging the hype, because you know that you want stuff from both of the games, and they're not giving it to you all at once.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense to do it this way. Yeah. Although I, for whatever reason, and probably with a lot of other people too, just assume they were going to drop both on the same day. I think they're going to get a lot of people double dipping, as it were, buying both versions. Because by the time they've played through the 3DS game, and it's coming to the holiday season, they're going to be really excited just for another Smash game.
Yeah.
I think some people probably think, like, oh my gosh, the Wii U, it should be reversed. The Wii U needs to come out, or the Wii U version needs to come out first. But honestly, I think that this is actually good in a way, because there are so many more 3DS owners out there. The 3DS owners will get it, and they'll, you know, love it, and they'll think, oh my gosh, I need to get a Wii U so that I can get the Wii U version too. So I think that could actually turn into a very, very good advantage for Wii U sales.
Exactly. Yeah, and why would someone release the lesser version? Well, no, I wouldn't say the 3DS is the lesser version, but I mean, for me, I can't wait for the Wii U version to come out. So I mean, for them to give me a taste, a pretty decent taste, to only know that it will, you know, the Wii U version will come out later. I mean, like, that's gonna maintain the hype. I think that's an awesome idea, but for Wii U, or for Nintendo and Wii U sales, as you put it, Holly, that's awesome.
Yeah, and one thing they didn't mention in this show, so I can bring up at any point really, is the connectivity features. Now, they one of the first things they said about Smash in general, these two games, is they will connect to each other in some way. We still don't know what that is yet, but if they can put in a convincing enough reason for the Wii U players to pick up, sorry, for the 3DS players to go and pick up a Wii U and the Smash Bros. Game, because it has some awesome connectivity between the two, I reckon they've got this great opportunity to sell a load of Wii U's this holiday season. All these, like, one of Nintendo's biggest franchises now, Smash. If they've already got this big avid fan base playing the game, and they just want to, you know, take it to the next level, and they need a Wii U to do it, then that's a very smart move in my book.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was actually really surprised when Wii U sales weren't doing as good as they were, just because, for me, I mean, I was immediately intrigued, but, you know, I did notice that they weren't doing as much advertising for the Wii U, but, I mean, they've been around for so long and killing it. I'm not surprised that they thought of this idea. Cause,
yeah, definitely.
I mean, they always think of something.
So, yeah, the next point I have on my bullet list here is they kind of reconfirmed that it's going to have the 3D and the 3DS version, but more so that it's going to run at a silky smooth 60 frames per second on either the 2D or the 3D mode, which is great news because most of the fighting games which have come out on the 3DS have had to cut their frame rate when they turn on the 3D. So it's really great that they've managed to keep the 60 frames a second going. And Sakurai did also make an interesting point. One of the ways they've done this is non-character objects like items and assist trophies and so on, they will run at 30 frames while your characters and their moves will run at 60 frames. So it's a very interesting way of how they've managed to do it, but I think a lot of people are going to appreciate that nonetheless.
Yeah, Zelda A Link Between Worlds, that was 60 frames per second. And just to rewind a bit, when I got my 3DS XL, I had been playing the regular 3DS for a long time, and I thought the 3D on the, you know, smaller screen, it looked all right. I got the 3DS XL. I thought the 3D looked pretty bad compared to the smaller screen. But then I got Zelda A Link Between Worlds, and it's 60 frames per second, and I actually thought that the 3D was very, very much improved by the smoother frame rate. And so I'm thinking that this is going to be a very good-looking game in 3D, which is very positive news for me.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it also kind of reaffirms that because of the two dates have been separated now, like they are kind of, they're both flagship titles. It's not like one is the lesser version and one's going to be the better version. They're all just, they both got their unique selling points. And it seems that so far the 3DS version is going all out to be the best it can for the 3DS. It doesn't seem like it's been compromised in any way, that at least that we've been told so far, which is really great. So the next thing was a brand new mode, and this one is exclusive for the 3DS, and this is called Smash Run.
This killed me. I was so excited for this. I mean, like, go on. Sorry, I'm just like, I'm cheesing over here.
That's good. So yeah, no, this is all fresh in our minds. We've all seen this like less than an hour ago, and so Smash Run, it reminds me of Subspace Emissary Mode, but it's a lot more condensed, but it has a lot more going to it as well. So you can play this up to four players at the same time, and you collect these kind of power buffs throughout the stages as you're defeating the CPU enemies. And after a certain set of time, you basically start a match between whoever's been, all the human players who have been playing, and you have all the different buffs that you've collected and earned throughout this kind of mini stage. And it's a really interesting concept. And they showed off some of the stuff which you'll see on like the bottom touchscreen, and like you can see your stats going up as you collect things. And I think this is a very cool and unique mode, and it's interesting how it is a 3DS exclusive.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. That's probably one of the reasons why they separated it from the Wii U to, you know, make it unique, you know, just to keep them separate from one another while, you know, maintaining the hype for the Wii U one. It's still, you know, it's still going to have this awesome thing that you can play. And even when the Wii U one comes out, I know I'm going to continue playing this, you know, like when I'm just in bed. I'm like, I think I'll play a four-player, you know, online thing with some randos. Just do it. Oh. This is like a totally new, like a multiplayer experience. I think it's brilliant. I never would have thought of this.
My question though is it going to be online? Because I don't think the video actually specified whether it was going to be online or just local multiplayer only.
I thought, did I mishear that? I could have swore it was online, like linking up random people together.
Lewis? Ooh. You need to answer this question for us.
Yeah. I'm just going through their email to see if they do specify or not. I'm not sure if they confirmed either way. I know they talked about it will have online capabilities in terms of the regular mode, but I'm not sure. It says multiple Nintendo 3DS systems and games are required, but that could be either. It doesn't specify on this, so it may be local.
It's online.
Yeah, I hope it's online too. But I guess one of the reasons why this could be a 3DS thing and not a Wii U thing is because if it was a local multiplayer, you have your own screens at least. But obviously, if they could pull it off online, then it wouldn't matter either way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, obviously, I hope all the multiplayer modes on both of the versions have online capabilities as well. But yeah, not sure currently if this is or not.
Well, at least I know I'll have my brother to play with. I don't know a lot of 3DS owners that I, you know, I'm close to.
True.
So
that is one thing which is quite exciting about the 3DS version, though, is the fact that you can take it with you. So it might not be something you can do all the time, but if you know you're meeting up with like a gamer friend on the odd occasion, you can just have your 3DS in your pocket, and then you can just like rock out a game of Smash Bros. Even if you're not at either of each other's house, or you're doing like something else, and you're meeting up at a certain place, and that's gonna be pretty cool, just for Smash Bros. Players.
There was a lot of cool interactions on the train when Pokemon X and Y came out, because I would always have mine, and I would like see people playing, and then I would just battle them.
Yeah, they haven't mentioned anything on this one yet, but the 3DS version of Smash Bros. Is bound to have some really cool Street Pass stuff.
Yeah.
So the next thing they talk about is actually a new challenger. And it's odd that they've done it in this order, because this was basically the last thing they showed off in the trailer, or in the direct itself. But we've got a new challenger, Greninja, the awesome final evolution of Froakie from Pokemon X and Y, joins the roster as a playable character in Super Smash Bros. For both Wii U and Nintendo 3DS. Beyond the character itself, I really love the intro that this character got. Mm-hmm. And it was a blatant troll move of a Mewtwo return, in my opinion. I'm not sure if anyone else picked that up or not.
I kind of did. It did look like some psychic move that he was using in the video, so I was like, who is this?
I feel that they kind of got his arms positioned like just like the Mewtwo strike as well.
Exactly. I thought the exact same thing, Lewis. I was like, oh, cool, Mewtwo. Why does he get this, you know, big introduction? Oh my god, it's Greninja!
Yeah, just out of nowhere. But yeah, on the topic of trolling, there was quite a few trolling attempts, some going into things we haven't talked about yet. But I really like Sakurai's humor throughout this. He really knows the audience he's playing.
Right at the end, he kind of... I didn't know what he was doing when he was like lifting his hands up, and he was like... Executive producer for some Super Smash Bros.
Yeah.
It was a goofball.
So yeah, the next thing we've got, oldies but goodies. Many of the classic characters from past Super Smash Bros. Games that are returning into Smash Bros. For Wii U and 3DS have new powers and abilities. Four characters that have appeared in previous games but have not yet appeared before this direct include... So here we've got the new Zero Suit Samus. We have Sheik. We have Yoshi. And Charizard. So Yoshi is kind of the most traditional return out of this list. Although Sakurai did mention that they've kind of made Yoshi stand more upright, like the change they did for Bowser. And it seems to make quite a bit, big difference visually, and it looks like it's made some difference to his moves as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the characters have all been kind of split up from a group. So we've got Zero Suit Samus has her own character now, instead of being included with regular Samus. And same with Sheik. So you can no longer transform from Zelda to the Sheik back and forth. It's just a separate character from the character select screen. And in a similar situation, Charizard. So I assume this means we're losing the Pokemon trainer. And he's being replaced by just Charizard with a full moveset. Well, I guess a slightly more complete moveset. And so what are your guys' reactions of, one, just having some characters, you know, split up, like the first, I would say, drastic change in movesets we've seen, and secondly, for actually having just Zero Suit Samus and Charizard as separate characters?
I think it makes sense. I feel like I'm talking a lot. Did you have something to say, Holly?
Well, I was just going to say, I rather like it. I just, I think that all of this is just to achieve the goal of making sure that you're not, you know, trying to multitask by trying to master two different move sets or whatever it is. So they're just trying to, I don't know, individualize characters more. And I kind of like that idea myself. I don't have any really strong opinions on it, but I just generally like it.
I like it a lot too. Because, I mean, we have a lot of singular Pokemon, and then there's the one character who is three Pokemon. It doesn't seem... It just it's not aesthetically symmetrical. Does that make sense? That didn't make sense.
I know what you're saying.
It's like, it would be like, you know, how, what else can I think of that would relate to this?
It's almost like having a Pokemon trainer as one of your Pokemon in one of the Pokemon games. But it's kind of exceptional.
Yeah, I can't think of a parallel, but yeah, it's just like we have all of these singular Pokemon characters, and then one selection that is actually three Pokemon. So it's like, why continue doing that? Why not just make one exclusive? And also, if there's one thing that, I mean, I trust about Nintendo, it's that they make things balanced. So I really didn't like Zero Suit Samus's like moveset and stuff like that. Granted, I didn't really practice it or you know, try to get good with it, but it didn't seem practical enough for me as like a full-blown character. But I know that if they're separating her from the actual, you know, just like, you know, regular Suit Samus, that she'll be good enough to be like her own player. I mean, they are like switching up the movesets and everything, so I think they're working hard at making everything balanced, so I'm down with it.
Yeah, I think Zero Suit Samus has the biggest change out of this list of four. I mean, first, visually, she appears to be wearing some sort of new version of the Zero Suit. And it has, like, these rocket boots as well. And it seems to have, like, a darker shade of blue and just some other visual changes to it. But, yeah, Sakurai was explaining that he's done a lot of balancing to the character. And, yeah, as you also said, Richie, it just seems that Zero Suit Samus is going to be just a more fleshed out character. Mm-hmm. It always seemed to me when I was playing as Samus and I did the final smash, which transforms you into the Zero Suit, it seemed that was just a more weaker version, and you just had to kind of stick in long enough to be able to get another smash and turn back to regular Samus, as it were. But so it'd be really cool. It's almost like having a new character.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be really excited just to see how she plays. Like, so the next thing we move on to now is online play. So both the Wii U and Nintendo 3DS versions of Super Smash Bros. Will offer online multiplayer gameplay with other players on the same platform. Players with broadband internet access can battle it out with anyone else who is online and also has the game. And it also goes into how there's a couple of different modes. There's going to be a for fun mode and a for glory mode, which is excellently named. I guess the main difference is for fun, you're on a random stage and you have all the items turned on. But for the for glory mode, it's final destination only, no items, which I just thought was almost a troll move in itself. And there seems to be like a slightly different ranking system between the two. For the for fun mode, it only counts your wins. But for the for glory mode, it kind of calculates I can't remember the actual term, it's like some sort of gamer score. It would work out depending on how much higher ranked you are compared to other players around the world.
Well, actually, I was rewatching the video because this confused me as well. I think that in for fun mode, it's going to calculate your total number of wins. For glory mode is going to calculate your total number of wins and your total number of losses there. And then the global smash power, which is kind of the ranking system, I believe, if, you know, my double watching it is correct, I guess. I believe that global smash power is only going to focus on solo play, which seems a little strange, but I think that's actually how it goes. So,
okay, maybe it's like an attempt to make sure the latency is as minimal as possible. And so they can be more kind of, I'm not sure vigorous is the right word, but they can put more detail in your rankings and be more, like, fairly more accurate because they don't have as much lag to play with.
Yeah, and I think that matching up online, because everyone, you know, kind of wonders how you're going to get matched up. Are we going to be matched by skill level? I think that there is going to be a skill level thing involved in being matched up online, but I don't know how that's going to work, and I don't actually think it has anything to do with the global smash power, but I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, thankfully, for on both the Wii U and the 3DS versions, just the fact that they do have the nice, you know, the friend system in the background, And we know the 3DS version already has that nice little button where you can join someone's game. So as long as all these things are implemented as they should be, we're going to have a much better online experience just off the bat, regardless of what features they put in there. So that's just exciting all on its own. Just the fact that I've already got my friend list set up for Smash Bros. In both systems. I don't have to, you know, worry about that on day one and start trading codes with people and like managing that thing separately, because that was just such a pain in the past. So yeah, I mean, from this point, we have something about here saying about the variety stages, and this one's pretty much just a reiteration of what they told us in the past. Basically, some stages are going to be exclusives to the 3DS and some are exclusives to the Wii U. The 3DS ones being ones based more off portable games and Wii U ones based more off the home console releases. But there will be some which remain consistent throughout both versions. And then they go to describe boss characters on particular stages. And this doesn't seem to be any particular mode. It just seems to be a quirk of the stage itself. And one of the examples they gave was Wily's Castle, where the Yellow Devil will make an appearance sometimes from the background to the stage itself, and the characters have an opportunity to destroy him, and if they do, he explodes and is very likely apparently to blast the other characters off the screen with him. And so that introduces an interesting dynamic. And he also teased Ridley being in the Metroid level, but from all the trolling he was doing throughout this at the show, I'm not taking that as a confirmed fact. He still might be a playable character yet. In fact, I reckon this only increases his chances, and I wasn't on that camp beforehand.
Yeah, we'll see about that one.
Yeah, and actually, I know I forgot to make a point. When they were revealed or re-revealed those four characters who are re-returning into this game, they made a point to say, like, Zero Suit Samus will not be appearing in both before confirming that she actually would be. And so I just thought that was kind of a mastery of trolling there by Sakurai, just to actually put that into the official video itself of this character's not returning.
Yeah, April Fool's was like a week ago, people.
Oh, that one... He's good at just working his fans.
Yeah, in fact, I imagine if he aired this on April the 1st, and we already had like a day or so notice of it that Sakurai was going to do a video about Smash Bros. For April 1st. I mean, it could have almost been this one. And that could have worked.
This whole thing was actually his April Fool's joke. This is yeah. real.
And it's afterwards we find out, oh, it's actually the Wii U one comes out summer, and the 3DS one is in winter. So the next thing they talk about is, again, it's about stages, and it's about the Final Destination stage. And so in kind of the Smash Bros. World, the Final Destination stage itself has kind of become quite infamous. In fact, that highlight, like the, I'm not sure I want to say top tier, as it were, but, you know, tawny level players have kind of this apparent attitude about them that they were, you know, they only want to play on the, you know, Final Destination. They don't want to use the items. And there's only a few characters that they can choose from to play at Smash Bros. And I think almost to help these sort of these types of players, Sakurai is introducing different variants of the Final Destination map, so it can kind of be skinned to look like the other stages, just to add some variety and to colour to these types of players' gameplay. And it was really cool to see the Final Destination like looking like the various other different stages, and it's almost like you're getting a whole bunch of extra stages for free, as it were.
Right.
It's nice to have variety because, you know, on occasion I like to do a Final Destination mode with no items. It's definitely not the mode I play most, but it's fun to do that. But yeah, it would be even better to, you know, add a bit of variety to the visuals of that. So that's cool.
I love the whole stage variety thing that they're doing, because, I mean, that's something that they really haven't done before. And with the 3DS and Wii U options of having like different, you know, 3DS game stages, or, you know, like handheld game stages for the 3DS version, and then console-based stages for the Wii U version, I think. And then along with the Final Destination, you know, to fit, like, to just go back to, you know, other Smash Bros. Final Destinations and stuff like that. It was just a thing that they've never done before, that they're really kind of working the whole nostalgia factor on.
Yeah, and there's going to be, you know, along with those variations in visual, on the visual side, there's also going to be, you know, the changes in music as well, which is always a good thing if you ask me.
Oh, I agree.
Oh, definitely. And this is, it's not, I don't think, something which is actually touched on this list I'm going down, this official one. But they did say on the Direct itself that the 3DS version, you're going to have a choice of two songs per stage. But on the Wii U version, you're going to have a much greater library of music that you can choose from to match up with the stages as you, while you're playing with them.
Oh, man, and choosing is an awesome idea, too.
It is. I did like the how in Brawl you could even change the percentage of how often a song would come up on a particular stage.
Yeah.
Just that level of detail Sakurai puts into these
games. They're making it so much better. It's like ridiculous. It makes me wonder what the heck they're going to do for the one after this.
Exactly, yeah. And so the next thing we got here, it's, again, it's more of a confirmation. They say items, trophies, Pokemon items, assist trophies, Pokeballs are all returning. However, there is a new addition, which is Master Balls. So obviously this works in a very similar way to the Pokeballs, but they will be limited to just legendary Pokemon. And they showed some of the different Pokemon which would pop out of Master Balls. But it's basically splitting up the different Pokemon which would be appearing, because we have had legendary Pokemon appear in the past games. So I guess it's just an extra level of customization. I mean, it's cool to see the Master Ball in itself, but it also means if you really wanted to, you could switch off Master Balls but keep Pokeballs if you think they're a bit overpowered. So yeah, it's a little addition, but it's still nice to see.
I mean, I think it's genius, because I don't know about you guys, but when I'm playing like with items, when the Pokeball comes out, you're going for the Pokeball, because you want that. And same with assist trophies, but it's like, you want that Pokeball. But, you know, when you see the purple Master Ball, you're like, oh my god, I gotta get that. So everyone's gonna be going for it.
That's true, because with the Pokeball, it's not always great. I mean, it's very rarely kind of, is it a bad thing? But sometimes it's just a bit pointless, because they have Pokemon like Magikarp and so on in, which do absolutely nothing. However, I don't believe there's any redundant legendary Pokemon in these games. So you know you got something good if you've seen a Master Ball pop up.
Unless it's like Fionn or something. its attack is just not evolving.
Yeah. So the second to last point we have on it is basically another reiteration that there is going to be connectivity between these games, but we're not talking about it yet. So it's an odd bullet point to have to see down here. But basically, at a later date, they will talk about how the Wii U and the 3DS versions connect up to each other. And the final point here, and it's a big one, and they didn't put much time into it in the Direct, is that there will be custom moves. In a series first, players can now customize movesets when playing locally or online with friends. More information about this feature will be announced in the future. So just that kind of very vague description of what we saw. And we saw a tiny little bit about, like, the user interface and how that would work. This is pretty big.
Yeah. I'm wondering what they meant by... Like, I'm wondering what effect it's going to have on the game, because you can't customize when you're playing online. Like, with... Well, online with, like, random people.
Yeah.
But, like, you do it locally and stuff like that. But I'm just, like, wondering what that even means. I wonder if there's a... If it's essentially going to be a handicap, or if it's going to be, I really have no idea. I'm also just excited, because the more moves in general is awesome.
Sid?
Well.
Sorry, I'll let you go on, Holly.
All right. If the footage, I don't know, the footage made it seem like it was kind of a handicap thing to me. And so that would just be my best guess.
Well, what I was seeing like from Mario, you know, like, he had, like, the regular fireball, but then, like, a fireball that's going fast and it's small, but then there was another one that was big but moving slow. So I'm wondering if they have their own separate, like, perks, like pros and cons, you know, because the big one is obviously not going to go as far, but it's, you know, but it's huge. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I think you might be on this thing there, Richie. I think that, like, each individual move will have, say, 100 points assigned to it. And mm-hmm. you'll be able to drill down there and change the statistics of where these points are assigned. Like, you're going to have things like power, speed of animation. Like you're gonna have odd things, I reckon, like gravity or size and all these little bits. And you can like turn one down to move another slider up. And I think that plays into why you can't play it with strangers. I reckon this essentially unbalances the game.
But, yeah.
You know, you're if right. you're playing with it, your own friends, you know, knock yourselves out, have fun, do some crazy stuff. But yeah, it would be a bit unfair to just play with randoms who aren't necessarily playing with the tweaked modes, because you could, you know, just really abuse the system and find this like awesome combination, which is just, you know, destroys things in like this weird combo. But yeah, that's been really fun to play with friends.
I'm not sure I'm going to use it, honestly.
That should be fair.
But I like to do the special battles, you know, like to just like turn up like, 200% damage and high speed and everyone's huge. So it's just like a fun little battle to have. I think it'd be funny, you know, if your idea, Lewis, is correct, where you have like the sliders, you know, making things powerful and you only have a certain amount of points. I would like to just make everything huge. So I'm just like shooting gigantic fireballs that do 1% damage. I think that'd just be hilarious and like a caricature kind of effect.
See, I think it'd be fun as well if you could kind of use this with some of those older modes, those special modes that they had in previous games. And just that combination of how, like, having customized moves and having, like, cut the customized mode itself, that would be great. And you could really, like, have some very specific matches. And you could almost, like, theme matches to the particular stages.
Yeah.
And that'd be cool. To be fair, I mean, especially with Sakurai Games, I find the more options, the better. And he does like to put in lots of these weird little controls to let you personalize the game to how you would like. But again, all these things seem to be options so far, which is absolutely fantastic. So yeah, you can essentially play Smash how you want. I mean, he's saying that he's happy for the tourney players to just use Final Destination with no items. You know, he's more than happy. He's given them some extra things that can, you know, spice up their game while keeping it how they want. But on the other side, the people who just want to go crazy have all the items, you know, not just on, but their, you know, the frequency increased. But they also want Mario's fireballs to be twice the size and all these other bits. Yeah, you can do that as well. Or you can find some, you know, little balance that you personally like somewhere down the middle. But yeah, I'm just quite excited to see how they do it. I mean, it might even, you know, play around with that kind of gamer rank of yours, and you might be able to assign more points if you're higher ranked or something like that, and that would be crazy. But we've pretty much exhausted all the actual content of this Direct, at least according to this email I've got. So before we move on or anything like that, I just wanted to go around here and what was your kind of favorite moment? What really stood out in this is like, you know, this was the best bit about this show.
I liked,
sorry, you can go.
Okay. I mean, it was pretty informative in the beginning. A lot of stuff, I mean, we already knew. There were a few tidbits that were, like, new information that kind of, like, put the pieces together for us.
Tidbits.
What's that?
Tidbits.
Yeah. So, but, you know, as the video went on, they kept on like releasing more things and, you know, things got more exciting and whatnot. And I loved the very little scene that they showed of Mega Man's Final Smash, where they got all the freaking Mega Man together and they were all just like shooting. And they did it perfectly. They always do that. And it gets me every time, and I hate them, but I love them at the same time, because they show you just a little bit, and you get freaking excited, and then they don't show you the rest. So, I mean, Mega Man is, like, my favorite series of all time. So seeing all of them there just showing up to do the Smash, I'm just, like, I was, like, freaking out. And then, of course, Smash Run was just, like, really, really cool. Just, like, a really new, unique idea. And then Greninja just kind of topped it off.
Well, I think that, like, all the reveals for the new Final Smashes were really cool. Pit, since he's one of my favorite characters to use in Brawl, his Final Smash is the Three Sacred Treasures, and I thought that was really, really cool, especially compared to his previous Final Smash, which isn't all that exciting, honestly.
Yeah.
But I actually want to pick three favorite parts, and they're very small, but they just made me really excited. Well, if I had to pick just one, it would be the final trailer that revealed Greninja, but I feel like that's almost cheating. So my three favorites, first, Zelda, her new down B, which is really neat.
Oh, yes.
Instead of, you know, like switching the sheet, she's got to have a new move. And so the new move is like summoning a phantom, which I just thought was so cool. I mean, they had that little screenshot when they revealed that Zelda was coming back to the game. They had that little screenshot of her, and it looked like she was kind of commanding a phantom. And I thought, that could totally be her move. I mean, she like possesses these phantom statue things in Zelda Spirit Tracks. So that could be a new move. So when it was, you know, confirmed as a new move, I thought, that's just fantastic. I was really excited about that. My second favorite part would be revealing Midna as an assist trophy, because Midna is one of the coolest characters ever. If you like Zelda, then you know who Midna is, I guess. And hopefully you think she's awesome, because she is.
I think so, Midna is probably the best kind of assist character you've had in the Zelda games.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So much better than... Yeah. Navi, of course. And even Fi, or Fi, however you want to say that. Although yeah. I kind of liked Fi a little. But Midna, obviously, the coolest. So as an assist trophy, that was just kind of a cool reveal to me. And then this part. He did these weird trophy quizzes in the video where you had to like guess just from a limited viewpoint who the character was, I guess. And the first one was, Tiki, is that her name? The dragon.
Oh, yeah.
Dragon lady, I guess, in Fire Emblem. But one of them, I think this was like the third one. It's like trophy quiz time, 3, 2, 1. And then it revealed Palutena, kind of like her bottom half. And it's like kind of moving up. And I'm all like, Palutena, I'm awesome. And then, yes, it's the pseudo Palutena that you actually fight in Kid Icarus Uprising. And I just... thought that was hysterical. Anyone who hasn't played Kid Icarus Uprising, just go get it right now and play it, please. It is so good.
Yeah, it's made by the guy who's making this, so.
Yes. And it's one of my favorite 3DS games. But anyway, those are kind of my favorite moments. How about you, Lewis?
Yeah, sure. My kind of favorite thing was actually, oddly, I don't know, I'll be honest, I have changed mine because I've had some overlap here. So what I'm going to go with is the breakup of some of the old characters. Now, I really like two of them. One was Charizard, and this was because I was never that fond of the Pokemon trainer. But I think Charizard as a character is pretty awesome. It's like another big heavyweight character, and I think, like how we were talking about Zero Suit, Charizard is going to be like a lot more balanced now. I think he's going to feel a lot more like a full-fleshed character. And... He fits really nicely. And it's good to still have we have Pikachu already, but another representative of the original Pokemon series. And although we do have like other big dragon-esque creatures in this game, I don't know, there's something about Charizard. He's got a really good image about him. He's pretty cool. So I liked him. And to go alongside that, the new Zero Suit Samus, in terms of character design, I think she looks a lot better than the Zero Suit Samus that they've been using for quite a little while now in the bright blue suit. And yeah, I think Sakurai's done some really cool little changes to her design. And the moveset looks like it's being improved quite a bit. And so I guess some thanks to the sort of rocket boots she's picked up from somewhere. But yeah, I mean, she looks like a much more robust character now. So I'm looking forward to playing as both of these guys. Well, guy and gal, as it were. so, yeah, I mean, there was just so much good stuff about this show. I was just pleasantly surprised. They covered quite a lot of ground, and the show was a lot bigger than I was expecting. I was thinking it was going to be like a 15-20-minute type thing. They'll have a character reveal at the end, and they're just going to go over a couple points about the game beforehand. But now they ran through an awful lot, while also keeping us in the dark about quite a few things as well. And I think there's something to be said about not revealing everything. So I think they did a really nice balance here. So yeah, it's one of the Nintendo Directs I've kind of left feeling pretty fulfilled. And Yeah, I think they hit all the right notes there.
Yeah,
yes,
agree.
I agree.
It definitely lived up to it. It definitely hyped us, you know, a lot more. I mean, from the start, I was just like excited that there was someone talking about actual things, like nothing, no rumors. It's like we are revealing things right now. This is going to happen.
Yeah, and I guess if I can cheat and add an extra one in there, it would be the fact that we're going to be playing Smash Bros. Sooner than at least I expected. Because I didn't think we'll have a summer release for either. And so the fact that we'll be playing Smash Bros. In the summer, that's a win in my book. And mm-hmm. It's also increased my interest in the 3DS version. That feels more like an actual its own thing opposed to being in the shadow of the Wii U version. So that's also quite cool.
That's exactly what they wanted.
Yeah, it is. They did. Yes. Every time. So does anyone have any final thoughts before we move on Smash Bros?
I mean, I could just talk about this forever.
We do have the Q&A section, actually, so we're going to talk about it a bit more later. How about you, Holly?
I'm good. I could talk about it forever, too, but for now, we'll just call it good.
I actually wanted to just, like, kind of reinforce something that Holly said, how she was talking about how, like, Zelda's moveset is when she was like, what was it, summoning the phantoms or what?
Yeah, just phantoms.
Yeah, just like how they're doing that more often. By doing that, I mean like they're making the movesets more, what's the word? Like they're relating it to actual game, like things that they've done. Like Luigi's smash attack in Brawl. I didn't know what that was, and I still kind of don't
know. Nobody knew what that was.
But now Luigi's smash attack is very apparent, like obvious, you know, it's from freaking Luigi's Mansion, you know, and it makes sense, you know. So they're like taking bits from other games and like really putting them in, and just they're just doing so good with like making it relate to all of the games we've ever played in our lives through Nintendo.
Yeah, no, I have to agree. They've done a good job on that. And I guess some of it's just purely because they've got more stuff just to work with now. I guess Luigi was in the original game, wasn't he? Original Smash Bros. As an unlockable?
Yeah, I think he was unlockable.
And I guess his moveset did change quite considerably in,
In Brawl. Yeah, in Brawl.
Brawl's the middle one, isn't it? No, Brawl's the Wii version.
Yeah.
Melee?
Yeah, sorry, I'm thinking of Melee, of course, yeah. So obviously, when Melee came out, obviously Luigi Mansion was a thing, so they could have used that as inspiration. But I think it was a bit too new to do that. So some of these ideas, I mean, especially with the second game as well, it's more set as his character. So yeah, it's good to see them take inspiration from things like that. And yeah, exactly as you say about the Phantoms for Zelda as well. So it's cool. And you never know. I mean, obviously, this isn't the final word on Smash. There may be more little tweaks to characters that we're not aware of yet. And I personally welcome them. I think it's pretty cool that they're not holding this so sacred that they can't change anything about the existing movesets.
I think Mega Man's moveset is just the best. Because it's like every one of his moves is something. I mean, like, I can't wait to play him and know exactly what I'm doing with every single attack, because I've played the Mega Man games, like the NES Mega Man games, through 100 times each. And he's definitely going to be the character that I'm going to like use as my main.
Yeah. I really liked in that video how when they were going through all of his moves, they also had a little note on which game it came from, all games in some cases. And just like the attention to detail they're putting, especially also in the third-party characters, it's just great to see.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I intend to make Wii Fit Trainer my new main character, for sure.
She actually looks awesome.
She does.
I was going to ask the all-important question, though. Is it going to be a male or female Wii Fit Trainer?
Well, female for me, obviously. You guys can play as the male one. Don't be creepy.
Yeah, I think, I mean, when they first released Wii Fit Trainer, it didn't really speak to me just because I never used Wii Fit, but upon like seeing the moveset and like the just what she does or, and what he or she does, like the thing where you could like focus or meditate, you like become stronger. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, so did I. That was
deep breathing. And if you've played the games, that's actually kind of funny.
It is, yeah. I like how they've just managed to turn Wii Fit into a Smash Bros. Character, essentially.
Yeah.
Sakurai is a genius.
We haven't even talked about the villager, though. I completely forgot about the villager.
That's true. I mean, was there anything actually new announced about the villager? I know he's like an awesome character anyway, but...
I don't think there was anything new. But that's, for me, that's the same thing as the villager. Like, how the heck did they take a character from a game that is so peaceful and turn him into just a killing machine?
Oh, exactly, yeah. And I still like that move where he can plug anything into his pocket, including the projectiles and so on, and just fire them back by taking them out of his pocket.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And actually, did we see his final smash? We saw a new
move. Dream House. Yeah, it just like gets built and then it explodes or something like that.
Yeah, it's brilliant. So it's this new house, and does everyone like it like get sucked into the house or something, or do you just have to build it next to people?
I don't even remember that. I must have.
But it looked hilarious. Yeah, because he basically builds his house and it looks like they're having a big party, and then it explodes.
What
it destroys everyone.
Smash attack B, like he does, like everything else is taking something from the game and making it violent. So it's like, let's turn paying off our house into an explosion somehow.
Yeah.
And you guys, we haven't talked about Rosalina either, but oh my goodness, I think we need to move on from this.
Yeah, we might have to. I'm going to leave a very small footnote saying something else we haven't talked about. Actually, no, I'll save it to later because I think it'll come up in the Q&A. Okay, so after a very full-featured first segment, we're going to move on now to talk about Richie Palis' Kickstarter, which is currently live, and the project is called simply NES, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing I wanted to ask is essentially, what is the project all about?
Well, as you can probably know, I love Nintendo. I grew up with Nintendo. Like I remember when I first got my first NES, my brother got a Super Nintendo, and it was my stepbrother, so he lived with his mom. And so when he got a Super Nintendo, he gave me his NES and all of his games. Probably the best brother move
ever. Yeah.
So, I had so much to just be instilled into my mind. And so, you know, growing up, you know, he had the Super Nintendo, played that. We always got the newest Nintendo systems. But, you know, as I was growing up, I also got into music, really loved playing, really loved composing. So after, you know, college, going to college for jazz and composition, I'm now getting my master's in composition with a focus in jazz. You know, I've always wanted to do something with, you know, all these melodies and tunes from my past, and put them into, you know, like a jazz setting or something like that, because it's just part of me. I have to honor the Nintendo thing that I've grown up with. So this project is a way for me to honor the Nintendo music that I've grown up with in a way that I don't think many people have ever really heard, because it's not going to be just jazz. It's going to have like nostalgic elements. It's going to have, you know, crunchy 8-bit synths and stuff, and ethereal synthesizers and whatnot, you know, so it's going to be, even for me, a completely new musical experience that, I'm trying to create, to mold, because it's taking these two separate genres and putting them together. So that's pretty much what it is. I started working on it like about 8 months ago. I basically arranged all the music throughout the last 8 months in between, you know, working on schoolwork and stuff like that. Excuse me. Had the hiccups. But yeah, it's really just a way for me to express my love for Nintendo, do them right, and the Kickstarter has a ton of people on board, which is why it's kind of expensive, but I kind of wanted to go all out just because, you know, why not? You know, I didn't want to do something that I could do in my home by my own. You know, I wanted to get as many other great musical minds together. I said other musical minds, like mine is musical. Well, so that's pretty much it. It's going to be a part of a trilogy because my favorite melodies are from all three of the first, like, Nintendo systems. So we got NES, Super NES, and N64. So hopefully if I can get this one off the ground, I'll be able to go on to do the SNES one and the N64 one. But yeah, that's pretty much the gist of it.
Excellent. What I wanted to go through, and I know you kind of touched on the subject already, what is your gaming background, as it were? Is there any particular, like, systems or particular games that come to mind when you think about what got you into gaming in the first place?
It must have, I mean, like, I think just the sheer immersement from the beginning is what got me into it, because when I had the NES, when I first got it, I remember I had, I had Rad Racer, Ninja Gaiden, Super Mario 3, the first Super Mario, Mega Man 2 and Mega Man 4, what else did we have? I'm looking at what I got over here. Bubble Bobble, for sure. Bubble Bobble was, like, probably the game that I played the most when I was a kid because it was so simple. Burger Time. So, like, and all those games just have awesome soundtracks. So that music was just, like, just stuck in my head. Oh, yeah, Bass Wars. I don't know I don't know many people that have played Bass Wars, but have you played Bass Wars?
No, I can't say I have. How about you, Holly?
No, I've never heard of it.
It's Bass Wars is a baseball game where you are robots playing baseball, and if you, like, steal a base, or basically if you're running to a base and you get confronted by, you know, let's say you're running to second and the second baseman gets the ball and you are confronted with the second baseman, you fight. You basically just, you know, fight one another. It's not like, you know, you're out. You fight. It's awesome. It's just robots killing each other and playing baseball. It's a hilariously ridiculous concept and it's like the only baseball game I ever really played. And that's kind of how it is. It's awesome. I mean, I'm sure it's like $5 on eBay or something, but that's kind of how my sports game thing goes. Like, I would play Blitz. I would never play Madden. Like, I would play the out of control, ridiculous ones.
Yeah, I wonder if it ever popped up on the virtual console at all. I might have to check that.
I don't know if it did. It was, I mean, I don't know how popular it was, but yeah, so, I mean, you know, I actually didn't have the Super Nintendo until, you know, I went to college and got my own, but my brother had the Super Nintendo, and when we would all get together, on Sundays, we would all get together at my grandma's, we would all play Super Nintendo, and he had Chrono Trigger, he had all three Donkey Kongs, he had... What else did he have? You know, Super Mario World. I'm looking at what we got over here. This was actually the only time where a sports game really affected me. Madden 95, only because the sound effects are hilarious, and they're just like, and the game just looks silly. So it's just one of those games where, like, I don't care about football. It just looks funny. And then Final Fantasy 2 and 3, aka 4 and 6.
Yeah.
I think N64 is when things, I mean, like, I loved video games, you know, obviously I loved video games from the start, but I think it was when I got N64 that things kind of just, like, exploded because of Rareware. Like, Rareware changed my life.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I'm looking at some of these games, and I'm, like, remembering when I got them for Christmas, and just the cover of the game would rush back tons of memories. I mean, Rareware definitely made the best games for N64, arguably of all time.
Yeah, definitely. I remember one fateful Christmas morning being eagerly awaiting a copy of Jet Force Gemini.
Dude, I'm looking at Donkey Kong 64 right now, and when I look at Donkey Kong 64, I remember the Christmas where I got that and my brother got Jet Force Gemini, and we went to the basement and played and like played them. Like he played Jet Force for a little bit, and then I played Donkey Kong, and it was just I couldn't believe that something can be this amazing and fun. Those two games are perhaps some of the best of all time, dude. I can't even go into it. It's just it's just too much for me. I really started collecting when I went to college. Because I had all these games, but I got like GameCube and stuff like that, and I had a PS2. But I really got into development and like the aesthetics of video games and music, how games were made, mechanics and stuff like that when I got into college. So I started collecting everything I could get, collecting everything that people would call gems, collecting everything that were just like apparently the best games. You know, so I would play them and understand why they are the best games. And I'm really into that. I'm really into collecting, but also beating the games that I have. Like, I'm looking, like, I actually have a pile next to my video game collection of the games that I need to beat. And everything that's on the shelf is stuff that I've beaten. It's kind of like my gamer tag. This is like, hey, this is what I've played.
But next to that, you've got your gaming pile of shame.
And then, just the games that I haven't got to, but I know a lot of people, there's like a game collecting Reddit, and my best friend, Nate, he's on that, and he's talking to people about, you know, the games that they have to beat, and there are people like, yeah, I've got about 900 games I got to beat, and I'm like, oh my God, why aren't you playing them? You know, like, a lot of people just collect to have something to put on the shelf, and I'm like, I gotta play it. I gotta understand why it's so good. So I'm very into the development side of video games. Obviously, the composition side of video games. I'm just really into how it has become an art, how it's developed into an art.
Excellent. I think that's a good transition point, actually, because we've gone over your gaming background. And I was wondering if you could tell us a bit more about your musical background.
Yeah. I got a piano, like a little keyboard, when I was like, I think, 9. And from then on, I started playing piano. About a year later, I joined band, as a lot of people do, and I played trombone. As I got older, I started composing and arranging like classical tunes on the piano. I was actually more involved in piano than I was for trombone until I got to college. And by just a stroke of, I mean, I don't know about luck, but just by destiny, by fate, by whatever, it was, I ended up playing trombone as my main axe. So, but I continue playing piano as my source of composition. So I went to school, in junior high, I played in the jazz bands. I played both piano and trombone, depending on what tunes it was. It was kind of like a, just like a trade-off thing. You know, I did the same thing in high school, but I wasn't too involved I wasn't too involved in making it like a part of my life, because I actually did theater, and also I still do paint. So I was also a painter, so I didn't know what I wanted to be. And I just decided that I was the best at music for myself. And then things started kicking off when I went to college. I got my bachelor's in music composition, and then a double major in jazz studies. And now I'm getting my master's in composition, while trying to get video game. Oh yeah. I never even mentioned this. I want to be a video game composer. I plan to do that for the rest of my life. I don't care how hard it is, how long it takes. That is my goal, is to do that because of Koji, because of Nobuo Matsu, because of Grant Kirkhope. You know, like, they put these melodies in my mind. I can't get them out of my head, and I want to do that. I want to be able to make music in video games that bring people back to that point. Like, I see my video games as kind of like my link to the past, literally. Okay. Like, I see, like, if I look at a game, I will remember exactly where I was when I was first playing it, what I felt like when I was playing it, what was going on in my life while I was playing it. They're not just like games. They are literally my links to my memories. And I want to be able, like, part of that is, you know, the musical experience, and I want to give that to people. I think it's an awesome thing to be able to contribute to people's lives in that way, affect their memories, you know. It's kind of a beautiful thing to me. And I know that a lot of people don't see it that way, especially in my field, in music, in jazz. There's not a lot of people that like video games because they think it's just like, you know, they think it's just Call of Duty. And it's so much more. And I want to be able to show people that and show them that it is an art form that is growing and will continue to grow.
Yeah, I do feel that video game music is really underappreciated. Art form, but there are so many just absolutely great examples throughout all the different generations of game consoles, and I mean I'm not sure if it's any particular reason, but I a lot more examples come to mind from the kind of the older generations, like the more 2D based and I guess the earlier 3D systems. It might have been that the music just stood out more compared to the graphics. Or it might have just been I was at that point in my life where those sort of songs would just resonated more with me and stuck along with me. But yeah, I think some of the best music I've ever heard are songs which have been composed and put into video games. I truly do think it really is underappreciated for the art form it is, really.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I have something to add to that. Is that...
No, of course. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, I think I feel like the reason for that, the reason why the music really stands out in the earlier form, like in the earlier consoles, is because that music had maybe three tracks, maybe four tracks. You know, like a drum beat, a bass line, and then the melody. And the melody is the thing that you hum. I mean, just for the people who don't know anything about music, you know. The melody is the thing that is catchy, the thing that you sing. And as we get into later stages, like in the Xbox and the, you know, Xbox 360 and the PS3, the melody is less important, and kind of like the Hans Zimmer approach, like the big production, the big epic, you know, choirs and big strings and stuff like that, big timpani drum sounds. It's not about the melody anymore. It's about having this big cinematic production. And it fits. A lot of times it does fit, but it doesn't stand out. It's about the production and not about making a song that is going to essentially help brand your game. I'm looking at Billy Hatcher. I don't know if you play Billy Hatcher and the Giant Egg.
Oh, but, no, it's one I've always been meaning to pick up, but I never did.
Yeah, the melody, you'll hear it as soon as you turn it on, but, like, the music isn't all that flashy, but the melody is, like, it helped brand that game. It helps color the game more. It helps me to remember the game where I was, you know, it was, you know, where, what was going on when I was playing that game, because I feel like that's just the reason. It's like they had so little to work with, so they made sure that the melody stood out. But as we got farther down the line, and as there were more systems that came out, people cared a lot less about making the music appropriate for the game, and not just be like a cinematic kind of thing, you know. But Nintendo kept on doing it. Because, like, the Pikmin game, Pikmin has an awesome soundtrack. Super Mario 3D World has an unbelievable soundtrack. And there's nothing, you know, flashy, huge about it. They're not even, I don't think they're using, live instruments. They're still using, you know, virtual instruments. And it sounds awesome because they care about the melody. And that's really what is important. And that's what I want to bring to video games. I mean, do you know who Grant Kirkhope is?
No, unfortunately not.
You've heard his music then, because he did all the music for the Rareware games.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's you can, well, actually not the Super NES stuff, mostly the N64 stuff and some of the Xbox 360 stuff when it got, you know, bought out. But like the Banjo-Kazooie soundtrack.
Oh, that's pretty that cool soundtrack.
The soundtrack is awesome. And because it's melodic and you can remember each stage by the music, by how it sounds, you know. And he's from England, so he's doing that. And, you know, Koji Kondo and Nobuo Matsu, they care a lot about the melody, and they're in Japan. But it seems like no one is really, really caring about making the melody the focus in America. And that's kind of what I want to do. You know, Star Wars, John Williams wrote the music for Star Wars. And you can sing just about every song from Star Wars because it's so obvious, you know. It's just right there. The melody is right there, and you can just remember it. I want to kind of be that kind of person. I kind of want to be the John Williams of the video game music and kind of do a turnaround for this thing where we're going from all this production stuff that doesn't really stand out in these games and turn it into something that is memorable. It's kind of what I would like to do here.
That's great. And I'm going through the different song choices you've put together for this album. And I think it's fair to say that they're not necessarily the most obvious choices in terms of what people may think as like just the most memorable tracks from the NES generation. So I was just wondering if you could pick out a couple of tracks that you've selected and... Well, first you just let the listeners know what they are, and then if you could just talk about why you chose these ones, as it were, either for that game for that particular series or that particular song in itself. Was there any particular reason that this list came to be as it is?
Well, most of the tunes are from games that I had. so they mean something to me, but... I mean, we've all heard the Super Mario Bros., like the very first Super Mario Bros. Song. That's probably the most common one. You know, we know the Zelda theme. I wanted to do something that not only were great melodies, but also stood out to me. You know, stood out to me as in something that can be applicable to a jazz setting. So I took stuff like... Bionic Commando, because it meant something to me. That was one of the games that I had as a little kid. And the first level, firstly, just has an awesome melody, but I could never get past the first level when I was a little kid. So I kept on hearing the same song over and over again, so that's the song that stuck with me the most. Same with Marble Madness. Could never beat that game, but I always got to level 2, because the first level was essentially a tutorial, but, like, you know, the second level was like a... you know, the full-fledged level, and I could never beat it, but that song was constantly playing. Same with Little Nemo. I could never beat it, but I always play the first level. So I'm choosing these tunes because they were the ones that spoke to me when I was a kid, but also they're speaking to me now because they're great melodies, and I can, you know, manipulate them and mold them. But they're also ones... I think that a lot of people know. I feel like for those of you who have played Ninja Gaiden, the Mineshaft song is the coolest song in the game. Star Tropics has a very fun, melodic, catchy dungeon theme. And for those of you who have played it, I feel like you can, you know, you'll remember it and you'll like it. You know, you can. I tried. I didn't want to pick the obvious. But I didn't want to go too, you know, far out of bounds to where no one would know it. But I wanted to pick stuff that maybe not everyone has played, but still have stuff on the album that people have played. So, like, you know, you've played DuckTales maybe and Super Mario Bros. 2, but you haven't played Bionic Commando. So maybe those two tracks will pull you in. You'll want to hear it, and then you'll hear the Bionic Commando thing and be like, hey, maybe I should play some Bionic Commando, and then you'll pick it up on eBay. But... that's kind of what I was going for, something like, these are songs that mean something to me, but...
It's really cool to hear that they are, like, really personally picked and they all meant something particular to you. Mm-hmm. But it's also just kind of good to have a nice variety and terms of the fact that if they were just like the big hitters from each big franchise, you know the main Zelda theme, the main Mario theme, and so on, we've already heard quite a lot of different riffs taken on the big titles and the main tracks for them. So it is really nice to see, one, just a nice variety, and two, just the fact that you weren't afraid to pick on some slightly more obscure titles. And you've got some great fan favorites in there, like things like, you know, Star Tropics, which are underrepresented a lot of the time. So it's great to see them there as well. And what I wanted to move on to next was the actual process, which would be, or just the actual, yeah, just the process itself of creating this music. If the project itself gets funded, what would you do with them? How are you spending that money, and how are you turning it into creating these kind of dream masterpieces which you've got in your head currently?
Yeah. Are you asking also how I like created them, like how I went about actually arranging them?
Oh, that as well, yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. Sure, I'll go into it. Well, the first thing I would do is just I would have like a YouTube video up of the track. You know, I would literally transcribe it verbatim. So I would take exactly the chords that are being played, exactly the bass line, exactly the melody, and I would have that all written out. And something that I think, since the melody is so important, I did not mess with the melody at all. A lot of people in the jazz world will take a melody and manipulate rhythms, which is fine. I mean, it's cool. It's like it's a musical thing to do. But in this case, I think that the melodies are really delicate and really important. So I did not mess with them at all. But what I did was change the harmonies underneath to give it a different flavor. So I would have the melody and I would see the harmonies that I wrote out and I would change them and maybe change the form a little bit, maybe add something like add a different bass line or something, or add a counter melody. There's a lot of different counter melodies. So a counter melody is essentially something that's playing behind the melody to kind of enhance the foreground melody. So pretty much what I did was that, just changing a lot of the harmonies to make the melodies stand out in a different, more not more flavorful, but just give it a different flavor, you know. So then, to go on to what I'm going to do with the money, I actually have it listed on my Kickstarter. Let me go to it real quick just so I could get all the numbers exactly right. Okay, so the first part of the process would be to record it. What I plan to do is get these five musicians that I've kind of corralled together. These are like the best jazz musicians in Chicago. They're like unbelievable musicians. I can't even believe that they would want to do this, but they're on, so it's great. So $2,000 would be paying for them at the recording studio, because we'd be recording for 8 hours. And what we would do there is just literally read the music that I've written, and there would be like no synthesizers added there. It would just be strictly acoustic, just instruments being recorded. And then also the recording session would be $500. After that, though, is when we would go into like the production stage, and that's when we would kind of take what we've got as audio files and manipulate them, maybe add 8-bit distortion, maybe just add 8-bit synths, maybe you do nothing in certain cases, maybe add some reverb. Basically, it's going to be a time where me and a very good friend of mine, but also an unbelievable like production artist, where we'll be basically kind of going through the tracks and adding what we think sounds cool, adding what we think sounds appropriate, you know, for like a Nintendo kind of setting. And even after that, it's not finished, because then we have to mix and master it. And probably the biggest hit the thing that made it the 10 grand essentially is the mixing artist. And it's because he is an unbelievable mixing artist. He's beyond talented. And he's got like a Grammy for he's got a Grammy for mixing. I think there was like a neo soul album that he did that was just like completely a masterpiece. But you know, he's like triple platinum with Kanye West. He's gold with Lupe Fiasco and Ludacris. He's platinum with Rihanna. He's like he's just done a lot of pop stuff. So he's worked with a lot of synths, but he's also mixed a lot of jazz albums. So that's why I think he's the perfect match, not only because he's extremely talented, but he is familiar with both sides of the spectrum, jazz and like, you know, pop, synth, you know, heavy production stuff. So putting those two together would be no problem for him, which was, you know, that's kind of like the hardest thing. I don't know if you guys know what mixing is, but it's essentially when you play a track, when you play any sort of music, it would not sound that way if it wasn't mixed, essentially. Just think of it sounding not good. Like, music does not sound good coming out of your speakers if you just record it and then play it back. You have to mix it to make it sound like you have – that's the word, mixing. You're putting things in certain spaces so everything comes out nicely and you could hear everything. So that's the hardest part. About this album is probably it was finding someone who would be able to mix this idea of mine, having like a bunch of synths and acoustic instruments together. So he actually is a lot more expensive, but he hooked us us up with a $4,500 deal. And as expensive as that is, it's actually really, really, really generous of him to be doing that for us. And then the mastering process is going to be done by a guy who's actually in the UK. If you look up Ambassadors, his stage name is Ambassadors, and he's doing some really awesome stuff out there. So he's going to be mastering it, and that's going to be a really actually reasonable price for how good he is of $300. So mastering is essentially making things louder and kind of like making things more apparent. Like if you have a tiny little like a triangle or something, you kind of boost the, you don't boost the level, but you kind of push it out a little more. I don't really know how to explain mastering besides just making everything sound louder and more apparent. So he's gonna be doing that. And so at that point, I think we're at something like $7,000, maybe $6,000, maybe $6,500. And then the last thing would be licensing and distribution, which is $2,200. So that would actually come out to $9,000. My bad. We were actually at $7,500.
That's okay. I wasn't keeping track of my side.
Yeah, this is why I'm a music major. I don't have anything to do with math. Anyway, so yeah, licensing distribution. A lot of people actually don't, I mean, a lot of people that cover Nintendo stuff, they don't actually license the stuff that they cover. It's easy to get away with it, but it's just not honorable for me. I don't think that is a way for me to honor the music that I love so much. So I'm getting the licensing, to put these tracks on albums and stuff like that, but then also distributing them to everyone through, you know, digital formats and also the physical copies of the album, comes out to about $2,200. Yeah, there it is. So it's a total of $10,000, and it's a lot of money. But you know, I decided to go for it because why the heck not? It's something I've been working on, and I thought I'd go big. It's struggling right now, but you know, I still believe that, you know, if people knew this, if people hear this, they know that, there's a lot of passion behind this. And even if it doesn't work out this time, I'm going to come back and I'm going to come back with something else, you know, to help enhance, you know, the idea in people's minds to get people excited about it. Yeah, this project will happen regardless of if this Kickstarter works or not. I'm going to make it happen.
Yeah. No, I think your passion's definitely coming across here. And yeah, it's great to hear just kind of the general process and also that you know, the different people you've got involved. I'm very impressed over here. So yeah, it sounds absolutely fantastic. I mean, I'm personally definitely already backing this project. It sounds absolutely incredible over here. I know I've been taking up a lot of time. I mean, Holly, is there anything you wanted to ask Richie at all about this? Because I know you're a big music fan.
Yeah, but I think you pretty much covered kind of everything that I was curious about. I just was thinking as you were explaining your music background, I was comparing it to my own music background. You said you got a keyboard, you know, like a little keyboard at 9. Well, I grew up with a music teacher for a mom, so I kind of just, you know, have the background.
Yeah, help out.
Yeah, I think I started formal lessons at 4 years old, formal piano lessons at 4 years old.
Nice.
But I haven't actually taken music as seriously as you have, and so our backgrounds don't exactly match. But, you know, I love piano. I did trumpet when I was in school, and later on I learned guitar, and I'm just pretty casual when it comes to music, but I do love, love, love music, just all things music, basically.
Sorry, yeah, there's one final question I wanted to ask. A bit of a sneaky question, really, but you mentioned this is a part of a trilogy of different Nintendo-inspired albums, and the second will be about the Super Nintendo and the third about the N64. I was just wondering if, at this point, you already had any ideas in mind of any particular songs from either of those.
The track listing is actually complete for all three.
Oh, really? If you could just pick one of the Super Nintendo and N64 one, just to tease us of what could be ahead or what is ahead.
I have let me get the as soon as I'm done with this, you know, even if this doesn't work out, I'm probably going to continue working on and actually writing out the music, because, you know, I'm done with the NES stuff, but I'm just so involved in this, I just want to continue writing it and just, because I love it so much. My God, I cannot get enough of this. I really, really want to tell you the entire track listing, but I want to...
That keeps some secrets.
That would make no sense. Yeah, absolutely. what should I tell you? What should I tell you? That would be a cool one. All right, well, this is one that I actually have written already, because I actually wrote this for one of my tunes for my senior recital a couple years ago, but from Chrono Trigger, my favorite game for Super NES. When you are fighting, when you're going to the final boss, you go through like a big ship or whatever called the Black Omen, and it's already jazzy. It's like I didn't even really do much to change it. I did change it, but it was already just like right there when I was like playing through this game. Like, this is the one, I have to do this. So the Black Omen, just because it's already written, I'll tell you guys, that is going to be on the album for sure. Let's see, what else do we got? Oh yeah, I'll give you these ones just because. now I'm all like, I don't know if I should tell you that.
I mean, this is almost a Sakurai-esque moment of trolling.
Yeah, I know. I will tell you that there's going to be music from Earthbound.
Oh, excellent.
From A Link to the Past, and also Yoshi's Island.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I'll just tell you another one. Super Mario World, like the main theme.
Yeah, that works.
That one is most certainly going to be on it. But there's one that I'm looking at right now that's going to sound really cool. I can't wait to start working on that one. But know that there is probably going to be a medley of one of like the main Nintendo franchises. So there's going to be a medley of basically the entirety of the soundtrack.
That
as a giant suite.
That sounds incredible.
I can't wait to do that one. Yeah. Let's see. So then, so that was Super Nintendo. I'll try and keep some more secrets for the N64 album. Let's see. There's going to be music from Diddy Kong Racing and Mario. Okay, Super Mario 64. It's one of those things where it's like, this is right there. This will be so easy to just like to write because it's already kind of jazzy and swinging. From Super Mario 64, the Bob-omb Battlefield, like basically the first level you go into. So that level is for sure going to be on it. Definitely going to have music from Zelda, but I'm not going to tell you which one, whether it be Ocarina of Time or Majora's Mask. And I'm actually going to put some Jeff Force Gemini on there.
Oh, excellent.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's another big secret. I don't even know. This might even be like a whole different album for itself. But I'm going to basically do an album. I think this is definitely beyond, you know, considering the fact that I would have to write three albums before this. But there's an N64 game that I would like to write an entire rearrangement, like brass orchestral arrangement for the entirety of this soundtrack. So, yeah, I really want to be able to do that eventually, but it's far too early to be talking about that sort of thing. But yeah.
No, that sounds really good. And yeah, I mean, I would definitely urge all our listeners to check out your Kickstarter. We'll put a link onto the website itself. So if you're listening to this on your iPod or a smartphone, we'll have the link in there as well, but the links don't always work in the descriptions. If that's the case, I assume if you go to kickstarter.com, search NES, you'll find this. But if you do have any trouble, head over to infendo.com, find a story related to this, and we'll have a direct link to the Kickstarter itself. Actually, Richie, before we move on, did you have any kind of final wrap-up thoughts or anything you want to say directly to the listeners?
I think I failed to mention something that kind of went hand-in-hand with this Kickstarter, kind of like the reason, one of the reasons why I'm making this album the way that it is. It had to do with just like the progression of you know, video game development and stuff like that. I remember probably, what, like half an hour ago after I was like, you know, before I really started running my gob, just I was talking about how games have developed, and I'm really into that idea of video game development and the art of doing that, and kind of how we have games now that if we had them released, kind of like, have you played Papers, Please?
Do you know about that? I've not, but I've heard a lot about that game.
That game will break your heart. Like, and it's got, like, Super Nintendo graphics. So if that game came out for Super Nintendo, people would be like, what the crap? I don't want this. Like, they probably would not want that game, you know? But, like, we have these games now where we've developed to a point where it's about an emotional experience. It's about, like, it's a thinking experience. You know, kind of like the Stanley Parable, if you know about that.
Yes, I have played through that.
Yeah, I mean, like, what's that one? Gone Home. Like these games, oops, almost knocked my mic over. Yeah, these games are just developing to a point where they're not so much games that are fun for the point of being fun. They're experiences that will make you think. And that's kind of how I wanted to move music forward with this album. Not to say that rock and chiptune are bad, because by no means. I mean, I think, you know, listening to chiptune is great, but we have so many covers of music that is chiptune and rock, the traditional chiptune and rock, and you know, perhaps, you know, there's a lot of, like, violin covers and stuff like that, which is really cool, too, which is moving ahead, but I want to move ahead the music from video games, kind of the way that video games have developed. So the way that this music is made is to kind of parallel the abstract development of these games and how we're moving forward a lot, to give different kind, to like, to evoke different emotions and to give off different experiences. I want this music to kind of, I want people to hear the melodies, but then feel even a different way because of the way that it's arranged. I want to give them a new experience with something that they are familiar with. So that's kind of my idea behind that. And I would just, for the people listening, I want them to know that, because I think that's important for them to kind of know going into this album, and then perhaps pledging that it's going to be something that is different, that is maybe even thought-provoking. that is still fun and fun to listen to, but interesting. So yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping, and I'm pretty sure that you're going to be convincing quite a few people to go and check out your own Kickstarter here. And again, the link is going to be on the website itself, so do please check that out. You do also have a couple of samples already on there, and you've got a lot more just general information about the project itself. So do please check that out.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to move on now to our final segment, which is a listener mail segment. And they are all related about Smash Bros.
Well, we'll start with this question from Essel. Well, Scott Essel Pratt, who used to be a co-host on Infendo Radio. He asks, is there anything you would like to see change in upcoming installments, such as controls, character styling, levels, fighting methods, etc.?
That's interesting. The first thing that comes to mind is just kind of like how when the Wii version came out, you could put in, you know, like your GameCube remote. I was very against that because I was about adapting to the new thing. So, I mean, I don't know about you guys. That was just me. But, you know, you're not going to be able to do that. There's people who are going to be like, where's the GameCube port? You know, how come I can't play with my GameCube controller? And it kind of doesn't go along with what I think should change. But I'm glad, actually, that there is no way to play with the GameCube controller. Like, we're going to be playing with the Wii U the way that it was, you know, the way that it was designed to be played. So.
Yeah, I actually embraced the Wii Remote Plus Nunchuck control scheme for Super Smash Bros. Brawl. And I feel like I didn't have any troubles at all once I got used to that. You can customize your control scheme. And so I just customized it so it felt kind of like the GameCube control, which is what I had been used to. And after that, it was just kind of smooth sailing. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I use the Wiimote Nunchuck combo too.
So does my brother. So there are people out there. Yay. It's funny, though. This question to me is funny because we just got that new Super Smash Bros. Direct, and it introduced all of these changes and improvements that just, I don't know, they haven't even quite sunk in yet. To me, it's like, oh, this game is just going to be perfect. There's nothing else I could ask for. And maybe later on I'll be thinking like, oh man, they should announce this during the next Nintendo Direct. But yeah, that's just kind of the funny thing about answering this question right after watching that Direct, is that at this point I'm just like, I can't even think of anything that I would change about the series. Except that I do wish that they had announced a Fire Emblem character. Marth can't be the only Fire Emblem character in the new installments in the series. And so I was kind of hoping for that announcement, but hopefully we'll get that a little later on. And, you know, that's not even a huge... Well, it is a huge thing, but it's not, you know, like a massive change to the gameplay of the series.
Yeah, I think...
Yeah, it seems like... Oh,
no, no problem. I was going to transition to the next, but if you've got another point, do go on.
Yeah, it seems like they're kind of sifting out the like multiple characters from the same game, besides Pokemon, it seems. You know, like Ike, Marth, and Roy. I mean, granted, you know, Ike is very different. He's just like a more powerful version, but like Marth and Roy are fairly similar, you know. So I feel like they're taking those, like, you know, maybe one of them out to put in something completely new, you know, like Wii Fit Trainer or whatever. So, granted, I will miss them, but if they are gone, I wouldn't mind knowing that they were working on one specific character like Marth to polish him up and to balance him perfectly.
Okay, I think this nicely transitions us into the next question, which is from Mike is a Poet, who asks, what character announcement or not being announced surprised you the most? So I think we've got a partial answer or an answer already from Holly. Was there anything else you wanted to add to this, Holly?
Well, I was actually kind of surprised that they, I don't know if this counts, but that they kind of announced that, you know, Zero Suit Samus is going to be her own character. Charizard is going to be his own character. Sheik is going to be his/her. No one really knows own character. And I didn't see that coming. I mean, I don't know if that counts because all those characters, you know, are returning from Brawl, but just in a different way. And so that was actually quite surprising to me. I don't know about you guys.
No, I definitely agree. And I think it's a good excuse to kind of trim some of the clone characters as well, because they'll be able to add them as actual characters to the character select screen. And they are, I mean, they're a lot more unique than, say, the different Fox clones. I mean, Zero Suit Samus plays nothing like regular Samus, and she plays nothing like Zelda, so why not make them their own characters when before you had these clone characters kind of, in my opinion at least, filling slots needlessly. We never know, those other characters may return as well, but yeah, I mean, I was pleasantly surprised by that. In terms of new characters, I was surprised about the new Pokemon character we got as well. I mean, I wasn't expecting, I've got his name already now.
Greninja.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting Greninja to make an appearance in this game. And especially with the video they gave, and I was really expecting a confirmation of Mewtwo at that point. But no, again, it's not what I was going to ask for, but I'm at this point pleasantly surprised by Greninja as well. Looks like a cool character. So yeah,
it makes you wonder if Jigglypuff is going to come back. Like when they announced Charizard as its own character, I thought Jigglypuff is probably not coming back, and that's, I don't know, to me a little sad if he doesn't. Yeah, he still could, but it'd be sad if he didn't.
The only original character who hasn't been confirmed then, I guess.
Okay, it's true. I didn't even think about that.
Well, I think Captain Falcon, wait a minute, Captain
Falcon. Yeah, he was an original, wasn't he?
And I think even Ness was in the original as well.
Oh, no, there's a few then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shoot, what were you going to say? I was just going to add to something you said. With. Greninja. I think they obviously put that at the end to be like the biggest reveal and the most surprising. And for sure, I thought it was the most surprising because of how recent that character is to just the Nintendo family. Which means that they were probably working on the Greninja character before they released Pokemon X and Y.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. I just think that's interesting that, you know, they decided to, and it's cool too. I think that that's good that they're not only like bringing back a lot of old stuff, but doing something that is very, very recent.
Okay, I mean, and we'll move on to now to our final question here from Mike. Who asks, will this game finally be a system seller for Nintendo? Is this the game going to put them back on the top of the video game world? it's quite a loaded question, really. Although it is quite interesting because it's split up into two very distinct releases now. So do we think this kind of 1-2 punch of Smash Bros. In the summer and then closing off for the holiday season, is this going to drastically change Nintendo's kind of place in the current like game generation? Just posing that to both of you two for now. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think we already kind of touched on it a little bit. I didn't actually mention this when we were talking about it, though, but I can just imagine like just thousands upon thousands of these little kids who bought a 2DS or whatever for Pokemon, because you know Pokemon, that is the real system selling series, especially for Nintendo handhelds. And so I'm just thinking about like all these new owners of Nintendo 3DS or 2DS systems who, you know, are going to probably want Super Smash Bros. For their 3DS. And then when Christmas time comes around, I mean, they're only little kids, so they can, it's not like they can afford their own Wii U. But when Christmas time comes around, that might just be, you know, that big thing that they really want for Christmas is a Wii U just so they can, you know, keep playing Smash Bros. And so I can see it being really effective at turning around the Wii U's fortunes and Nintendo's fortunes in relation to that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I know a bunch of Xbox devoted Xbox fans that play Smash Bros. So I think that it's going to appeal to everyone because it seems like Super Smash Bros. Is like generally across the gaming spectrum, everyone's favorite multiplayer game to play on Nintendo. So I think it will bring in a lot of attention, and with the amount of content in it, I think that it's definitely going to help them out a lot. Granted, I don't know if it's going to get to the top. It's in the top in my books, because I just think Nintendo just makes amazing stuff. They make the most polished games ever. And I don't know why people don't see that or why they don't try it out, but they make the best games. So they're at the top in my book.
I think I'm going to have to echo both of your thoughts here. I think this game will have some sort of significant impact to the, well, in a good way, to the Wii U come this holiday season. And I think that's going to come off the back of a very, very successful launch on the 3DS, which I also think it's going to push a lot more 3DS units, even though we already have a lot already out there, thanks to games like Pokemon X and Y. But yeah, I think all around Smash Bros. Is going to do really good for both of the systems. Smash Bros. Seems to be one of their kind of more traditional titles, which is really growing in sales each time. The original sold, because I pulled up the numbers here, just over 5 million, Melee pushed just over 7, and then Brawl over 11 million units. So these are one of the bigger franchises it has, beyond the more Blue Ocean ones, like the Wii Sports and so on. And I'm not entirely sure where Mario Kart fits in all this, but yeah, that's another absolutely huge seller. But Smash Bros. Sells a lot better than your regular 3D Mario games, and a lot of other big games like the Zelda franchise and so on, people normally point to as like the big system sellers. And yeah, so I think Smash Bros. Does stand a very fair chance to push a lot of Wii U units alongside the other stuff they're going to be putting out this holiday season. But yeah, no, I think it's a really good sign, and especially with that 3DS move as well. I think that's just a brilliant decision from them, or at least on a strategic point of view. I mean, obviously, I'd rather have both games ASAP. But yeah, I think that's going to do really well for them. So that comes to the conclusion of our listener mail segment. And with that, the end of this kind of super-sized show itself. As always, if you, the listener, have any questions for us, you can send them to contact@infendo.com. And with that, this has been Infendo Radio. Thank you very much for listening. See you later.
See you guys.
Later.